This is The View from Tab. I'm Jim Menick.
I'm John Cruz.
And I'm Mike Beats.
And we're back to the original three of us tonight for the first time
like
in a long time.
A flashback episode?
A very special episode. Beats gets married.
Yeah,
what, you know.
Is this a missing episode from the first season?
This is the one where we jumped the shark. Okay. No, that was before we started. Before we started recording, we started talking about a whole bunch of different things that we wanted to talk about tonight. And the first thing that I would like to ask about, because this came up in that talk, was on the joy of tournaments, the warm room. Either one of you, what is the warm room, which they used at Glenbrook's? And why is it called the warm room? Yes.
I think it's called the warm room. Because initially it was supposed to be called the War Room, but it was just, a mistype, and they never changed it.
I assumed that from the start, but then I have to say Michael Mangus posted a very convincing explanation that there's such a thing as warm data as opposed to hot data and cold data, and actually the data that would appear in something like the quote warm room actually is warm data. And I was convinced for a moment, I said, this could actually be true, but I'm pretty sure it's a typo.
Yeah, I've never heard of anything called warm data. So anyhow, what is it and how does it work?
Chris?
Right, do you want me to just, sure. The basic idea is that it's like having an online schematic, but the schematic is interactive. So in addition to seeing the pairings and where the round is going to happen and who's judging, et cetera, you can click on each debater to see the previous rounds that debater judged, what their record is from those rounds, the results, the previous rounds that judge judged, et cetera. Also, DriveTournaments has this really cool feature where it texts your pairing to you if you sign up for it, which I think is unbelievably convenient.
Whoa, if you go to the tournament, you find out where you're supposed to go by following it on Joy of Tournaments?
No. In fact, what happens is when you register for the tournament, and right now I think that the only way that this can really be done officially through the Joy of Tournaments is if you have Brooks or Brent there, because they need to do a bunch of specific
This is not something at the moment that you can do. Right.
It's not an out of the box solution right now.
So it's not literally plugged into. The tabulation in that software, right? But that isn't hooked up to.
But my understanding was that I asked Joe Hahn about this because, to be completely honest, and this is no knock to Brent Hinkle, I find the Joy of Tournament software a little confusing. I guess maybe just because I'm used to TRPC. And I said, wow, this warm room thing is so cool. I would love to do this at my own tournament, but I'm a little wary about telling Jim Menick that he has to now tab on something he's never tabbed in, right? On the other hand, Joe told me actually they were tabbing in TRPC, I believe, right? Beats, you were doing the same thing in JV division.
Yeah.
And then you just put it to Joy of Tournaments. Right.
That's right. To go back to how the rounds are texted or emailed to you is when you register, you can go over to the Joy of Tournaments table, and this is how they've done it at, I think, Green Hill and then also at the Glenbrooks. And you just give them your cell phone number and your provider. It does not text to Google Voice yet, but you give them your cell phone number and your provider. And what it will do is then he'll associate that with a school, for the coach, it will give you, if it's the school pairing, it'll give you who your debaters are debating, where, and what flight and all that stuff, and who their judges and so on. It'll automatically text you just your stuff that you need to know. For judges, it will tell you whether or not you have a ballot, which I think has problems because then no one stands by. But anyway.
That's true.
So that's how that works. And the way that it knows how to do that is when when you pair a round, you can just you save your file or you back up your data, basically, like you do in TRPC. You just do it in TRPC. Then you run this little program that runs a script that creates this output, and then you just upload that to the Joy of Tournament site, and then you press send alert recipients or something like that, and that's when it sends it all out.
Okay.
And then you do the same thing after you enter results, and it'll upload it. And you can toggle whether or not you want to have results be, you could do all this without making results open to everyone. That's basically how it works. And it's very cool how it gives you the ability to, you know, see who other people have judged and see who,
yeah,
you know, how people.
So this is really, I mean, it's, in a way, it's even independent of Joy of Tournaments. What it is, it's just, I mean, because all those files in TRPC are very straightforward data files. There's nothing magical. I mean, there's nothing in them. There's just text. So as long as you know how to read that text and you know what it means, you can, you know, play with that data till the cows come home. And they just happen to be broadcasting it in Joy of Tournaments. I mean, it's fun. I mean, I've had kids, you know, go into these tournaments and I'm not there, and I go onto this warm room. And I see how they're doing. It's pretty cool who they're debating, whatever, without even, you know, yeah, from, you know, 2,000 miles away. I mean, that's really sort of nifty. You know, I like that.
I think it's cool.
I mean, the whole idea, I mean, what you said in passing is really true. Letting a judge know that they don't have to judge is tantamount to telling them to please disappear as quickly as you can, you know.
Right.
You know, I've had, and we could talk about this later, I've had a lot of judge issues lately, but you do need judges standing by for whatever reason, and not going away until they are released, as we like to say. And, yeah, so that may be problematic. But the rest of it sounds pretty cool. I mean, certainly the historical aspect of it. I mean, just being able to look, click on somebody and see how they did. I mean, I want to see how somebody's doing at that. If I send somebody 2,000 miles away, I'm pretty interested in how they're doing. I want to know that, you know, what their record is after each round. And, you know, usually they'll text me or something. But if I can just click on this, I mean, that's really cool, too. You know, so I'd like that.
Yeah,
I think
they'll be using it at Blake. There are some drawbacks. The first one is actually what I think, and I didn't even think about doing this. And as competitive as people think I am, and as prepped out as people think I like to be for my debaters, I never even thought about doing this until Lexi mentioned it to me, Lexi Green from College Prep, that at Greenhill, some of her debaters actually stayed up, went through all the pairings that were online, to try to figure out who they were going to be debating in the morning.
What are they, nuts?
Because they basically shadow tapped the tournament to try to figure out who they were going to be debating.
How well were they able to do this?
Well, I think you could do it perfect. You could do it almost perfectly.
I mean, once you get pull ups, I mean, you know, if, I don't know.
But
I mean,
if you shadow tap five rounds, there's a very finite number of debaters you could hit in round six if you have
By the time you get there, but even there, I mean, if it works out really well, and you know the pairings, you know the numbers right, and it's enough different schools. But if it's, you know, you get two or three people from the same school in that round six, then all bets are off because there's going to be pull ups, and you can't predict the pull ups. So you can predict.
It's very rare that the tab program goes all the way out to random. And if you've been entering points properly and all that, I mean, I think it could be done pretty well. I mean, that's if you're doing. I mean, so at the Glenbrooks, for example, we just didn't post the results of round five or four. We didn't post the results of the last round of the night on the war room until the next morning, just to try to dissuade kids from staying up all night.
And we've done various things with that, not giving out whatever information so kids don't stay up at night. Usually the other reason we don't do it is because we're tired and want to go to bed ourselves, and it won't make any difference. They can find out in the morning, you know, whether they won that round or not. I mean, there's no greater urgency. I mean, on the other hand, posting the bracket or something then that you do the night before, I think, and let them stay up if they want to all night. Get down. My cat is attacking my computer. Okay. And we broke its leg, and it didn't dissuade it from any of these bad habits that it has. This is what I do at debate tournaments, too. I just said, look, I'll break my cat's leg. I'll break your leg. Get to that round. So you have to
Jim,
use.
no one has any idea what you're talking about.
Okay,
right
well,
now.
Moving right along. Okay, on the same subject then, getting back to normal. Like, look, if you're carrying a cat around while you're hooked up to these things, you're going to say dumb things too. What we did at Princeton, which is sort of a little bit like this, which is it's the other end of the equation, is, I mean, you know, Princeton, everybody is in buildings a million miles away from where we are. And so we asked people to text us the results. We used a Google Voice account for the texting because, you know, it's a lot of text. I mean, we did the first year we did this, we had to go to, I think it was Zion Sadiq's phone. And, you know, like you had to pay $800 for text messages extra because you got like, you know, 500 messages in one day kind of thing. But, you know, sending it to a Google account, it just appears on your computer. I mean, you don't even have to use your phone for it. So you just get these lists of, you know, the results, and we set it up, you know, give the judge's name and who won, blah, 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 blah. And this means we're starting to get results. I would say we probably save 10, 15 minutes on each round, easily.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
You know,
definitely.
Because you get a head start, and, you know.
And with the Google Voice thing, it's really organized, too. It's, like, awesome, you know. And it's not like you could you even save the, you know, and those seconds add up. You even save the time from like scrolling up in your text, to opening the next text. It's just there on the screen. It was really
you're
awesome.
Starting to, you're getting, you have on Google, you know, on this sheet or, you know, on the screen, you have 10 rounds already before you've gotten the first ballot because these people really are 10 minutes away. You know, so you're just, I mean, we literally waited once in one round, seven rounds, right? We waited for one ballot once in the entire tournament.
Right.
You know? And it was a late ballot that we had pushed out anyhow. And that one person didn't text. I mean, the problem that we get is people who don't text or whose phone runs out of juice or whatever. I mean, you can't
rely on a
completely. Or
people who type all in capital letters with no spaces, so it looks like a long, fast screen.
Yeah, I mean, there are some.
That's what I would do in the tab room, too. Although, I don't, the best part of the Princeton kids who had no idea what was going on. Every time now, first off, when you text all in capital letters, doesn't that just take longer? So like, there would be like these one or two judges who type all in capital letters, and I'd feel the need to say to Jim, you know, I would say things like, okay, so Bronx Science MR 29, blah, blah, 27, et cetera. But for those, I go, Bronx Science MR 29.
But I mean, it was a great system. It doesn't make any sense, though, unless people are in different buildings.
Right.
Yeah. And at the point where they are all in different buildings, though, it's fantastic. And a part of the thing is this is Princeton. Now, Princeton has a lot of parent judges and things like that in the novice division. You know, and yeah, they don't even know they have a phone in their pocket, much less know how to text on it. So we did get a little bit of that. And, yeah, that starts getting a little old after a while. You know, like the first time we did this a couple of years ago, maybe you didn't know how to text. That was cute, you know. But, you know, you have you pay $200 for the phone, and you're paying $100 a month to use it. You should figure out how it works, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think we get fewer and fewer Luddites progressively each year. But the other thing is, I mean, I know there was at least one person who just didn't have their phone with them, and, you know, so I can't do anything about that because they forgot to bring their phone, or, you know, battery running down. I mean, kids especially, their batteries are running down and things like that. But anyhow, it worked. But the key thing was having it go to the Google Voice account. And Google Voice is just in the last few weeks become ubiquitous with the whole Apple universe, you know, because it works on the iPhone and it works on the iPad, blah, 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 blah. And anybody can get a voice account, and you can set it up so that it doesn't ring on your telephone and all this kind of stuff. So you're not, because you can also have it ring on your phone, in which case it's just like getting a phone call, so I can't really understand it. I also would recommend this. I publish my phone number, and and now I publish my Google Voice phone number. So if anybody's calling me up on Google Voice, they can leave a message. And I actually tested this. It does transcribe messages fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
We don't think it would do too well for people calling in with results, though, because those are not so easy because they'd be calling in and talking about, you know, the Hun School of Princeton 48 and blah, blah, and a lot of names of people and things like
that. Yeah, any proper noun doesn't handle very well.
Yeah, but I mean, just I did a little test and said, "Well, this is a little test. Let's see what happens." And it comes out, "This is a little test. Let's see what happens." I was very impressed. So, so if people need to have, and I think a lot of us do need to have a public phone. We're online and things like that a lot, but a public phone that isn't like a real phone, so that you can get in from, if people can call. Because I'm always getting calls from somebody new in the area and they want to start a team, blah 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 blah. And this way, it's a real call as compared to always. I also get a couple of calls from people who don't speak English. I don't think they want to start a team. They probably want to judge, but so this way you can screen out those people or whatever. So, and yeah, I mean, I just recommend Google Voice, period. And we've talked about other things. I mean, I just remembered, Google Alerts. I started doing it for this particular, the two topics, for the PF and the LD topic. I remind everybody Google Alerts are the best things ever for just coming up with the latest discussion about topics. Google is good stuff.
But, maybe we should get Google to design our next tab software and just integrate it all.
Oh, by the way, this has nothing to do with what we do. That what is it? Groupon? They decided not to sell themselves to Google or be bought.
Yeah, that's
by
right.
Google.
And they were offered like $5 billion.
Yeah, like in the billions, and they said, "Oh no, that's okay."
That's crazy.
I mean, if Google, all right, we're making a pact. If Google decides that they want to buy the View from Tab. I will say, I don't care how much they offer, we're taking it. Okay.
I've been using Google Voice since it was Grand Central, and it's the only number I use. I mean, I use a Google phone, so it's completely integrated into my phone. And I can text from my browser. There are extensions for Google Chrome, so I can send all my text messaging right from my browser. It rings my GChat when there's an incoming phone call, and I can screen the phone call right from GChat and listen to the message that someone's leaving, and interrupt it if I want. It's a really cool thing. We use it at debate camp too for doing attendance and doing all sorts of stuff. It's just a one central number,
It's free, right?
It's free, and you can do cool things like you can pick your own number and have it spell something. So the number for debate for VBI and the number we use for VBT if there's problems is 3303-DEBATE, and it's an easy number to remember, and everyone can remember to text it. The interesting thing about the more we try to make everything electronic and make it so that people can do things remotely, even at the tournament, the less control I sort of feel about when ballots are being handed out. We talked about the idea at Blake because the issue with going up and down the elevators, how it causes such a great backlog of people, and the elevators take at least 15 minutes sometimes to go up and down, or at least one way. Especially when judges are trying to get their ballots and so on. So, to go completely ballotless, I don't know what you would do to substitute knowing that someone knows they have to judge, or if there would be some way for them to electronically check in and say, "I'm here, I know I'm judging," or "I got it, I'm going to go to my round."
Well, can't you just post a schematic on the... on the internet somewhere. I mean, to make a PDF. Here's the schematic. You look at it and say, "Oh, I got to go to room 220. And then we can just shoot up a ballot sometime in the next half hour. We have to get the ballots to them, but the people can start going there immediately instead of going to the ballot table first and going through all that.
Well, my question is, how do you know that? Yeah. I mean, I don't want to wait 20 minutes to know if a round has started. Right. So I at least the ballot...
That's true. You don't know that they have got the message.
You would say that. You're the king of the... Making sure that the judge has gone to the...
The thing about the ballot is you got a ballot printed up and it's gone. That means it's gone. I don't have to worry about it anymore.
The ballot acts as a check against someone that has just disappeared, which is Jim's big problem at debate tournaments, of people just disappearing.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about that. But, I mean, keeping track of them at that point electronically... certainly having them text their results would definitely make sense at a place like that. Not the results. I mean, the thing is, you're still going to say they don't have to come back to you down those same elevators, so they can have those rounds to you. You'll still save time if you do that.
As an aside, these are issues I hope the National Forensic League is considering in their tournament, which is in a hotel.
Yeah, it's
That's
It will be
a,
interesting.
I agree. I mean, I think that in theory, because, in many ways, Blake is, to me, the most awesome tournament. There's so many things about it I love. So I hope that they look carefully at how the Blake tournament runs things in terms of how to run a tournament in a hotel, because it's a fairly, that has a different set of challenges to it that people don't consider.
I'd love
Well,
to think. Yeah, go ahead.
I was gonna say I mean, you think it's gonna be really cool, and it is to not have to like leave and to have everyone in one place and all that stuff. But the problem is, unlike a school, well, for one, there's the elevator problem. For
The
two, in
elevator
a
problem.
hotel, there's a lot of distraction, including going back to your room and falling asleep.
Yes, I have done that at the Blake tournament.
There
I
are.
have. I've done that at every tournament I've been to.
There are problems that can completely derail a tournament if it starts getting far behind. I mean, there has to be a lot of coordination and a lot of planning ahead. One thing that the Blake tournament does is they tell you what room you're going to be debating in, I think for the first and second round, right off the bat, so that people can start moving their stuff quickly.
Actually, one year we unwisely flew in Friday morning, which was an enormous error, but we had no choice for whatever reason. We flew in Friday morning, and I thought it was kind of amazing that Tara Tate already told, because she was running the policy thing, like told me what rooms we would like just go directly from the airport to our rounds and start them, like hours in advance. Said, this is where you will be ahead of time. I thought that was awesome.
I mean, those are all things that we've thought about, and even in my discussion with Shane earlier this year, when we talked about how are we gonna, what's a more efficient way to distribute ballots, we thought of the idea that you would just alert people via text or put electronically where people need to go. But then you think about there's no check on whether or not the round has started, absent sending someone to every room to make sure it started.
Electronically, there's absolutely no reason you can't come up with something where you say, okay, here, you post the thing somehow in such a way that when a judge sees it, they just click and say, I
Yeah,
saw it.
acknowledged, or it says, I'm here.
Right.
I mean, that's all they have to do is just, that kind of check. And I mean, that's very, I don't know how to do it. I'm not a programmer, but I mean, we have that kind of thing all the time. I just click something and it has a result. Yeah,
Well,
it
the way
sends a
we
message. It's just a switch. So all you have to do is just, okay, here's the thing. It's next to your name. You click that button. So meanwhile, downstairs in tab, I have this thing. Okay, he clicked. He clicked. This one didn't click. She's not here. And as you get it down, they all click. And the one or two that haven't clicked, then you do something about that, just as if you were standing there going over the ballots. I mean,
If,
it
if.
just requires somebody with the programming skill to create a form, an interactive form, and then you can just see it on your big board downstairs.
Well, the way we do attendance at VBI, that was sort of developed by, it was pretty genius. I was skeptical of it at first, by Blay and Drew, is they just created a Google spreadsheet where everyone was supposed to be at what time. And when the person took attendance, they literally just put an X next to the person's name. And so people in the office could just watch it getting updated. Like at 9 a.m., when the first thing was supposed to start, they could watch all the lectures. The person that was taking attendance in the lecture just click X, 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 X for
But
every
that's
kid that
just
was.
one person in that form at the same time. You couldn't do that. I mean,
Well, no, you could have everyone in the form, everyone in the Google document at the same
is
time.
Google that good at multiple people getting in at the
Yes.
same time?
I had
Yeah, we had.
for Big
Really?
Bronx, I used the Google Docs for everything before the tournament, and we had the kids like I had the kids do the food sign up, and I have 200 kids on my team, and it was actually kind of amazing because I sent this email out saying, okay, now begin to sign up for the food, then watching like 100 people log on at once and move around in
Okay,
the
really
thing.
would. Because I'm thinking,
Yep, and
you're
where
going
it
to have 60, 70 people at the
handled
very
it
same
literally
time.
perfectly.
Well, that would be,
Yeah.
I mean, that's that. I mean, it's a little clunky in its way. I mean, I mean, it's
But
certainly,
then you
if it
would,
works, it
I mean,
works.
it would be tedious to have to type in all the rounds into a Google
No,
spreadsheet.
you don't
However,
have to. You can take this. I mean, again, you go into the data, and the data you just save it into an Excel spreadsheet. And that's not a,
oh,
that's
it can
not.
do that?
Sure. I mean, it's like I said, it's just plain data. So it's. I mean, that thing that you're printing. I mean, there's a way to print it to an Excel file.
Right. That's
Okay. So
exactly.
you,
Or a CSV.
yeah. So you just do it like that. Put it straight into the Google Doc, and you got it. So I mean, that's actually already built into
And
to
then you just tell the
gRPC.
judges when you get to your room, Well, I don't you
They don't even have to get
it's
to their room. They say, you just acknowledge. That means you're going to go, you're on your way, you're getting there. Because that's all I need to know. Believe me, it takes 6 hours for some judges to get where they're going, but I want to know they're going. I mean, once they pick up the ballot, from them getting to the room, I just worry about them picking up the ballot. That's always good enough. They picked up their ballot.
Because at least then they know if they have some internal clock saying within the next 20 minutes, I should go get this round
I'm
served.
going, yeah. And then like I said, then deliver the ballot. If in fact you have a issue, deliver the ballots to them. You don't want to do away with ballots. And I mean, I think it might get a little complicated to have electronic ballots, because then people have to have their computers open. It's one thing to put
Well,
in a result, it's
electronic
another thing.
ballots work if A, you have the check-in thing somehow. We'd have to figure out what the check-in would be. And B, they work if the school if the host is providing an electronic thing with which to enter your decision.
But I mean, but you still have to. Do I want to? I don't. I mean, I.
I mean, a runner could
Does
walk
everybody? Is
around.
every judge is lugging around a computer to every
No, but a
round?
runner could like walk around with an iPad from room to
But
room
I
in the
want to write
judge's
a result.
Wait, why couldn't they just use the same spreadsheet
Right,
where
or
they
But
just
see, I can
enter
see
in
that
the place?
spreadsheet on my iPhone. I can see that on anything and do the check-in. That's no big deal. But as compared to writing a ballot, I still want a written ballot at some point, or I want
I think
written.
a lot of coaches still want a written.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that. That's why I
Or
think having a form where you can type in comments.
But that requires that everybody has a fairly good device to type in comments, as compared to just clicking "I'm here,"
Right.
or
Well, here's
clicking
the
the
thing.
result.
A lot of judges don't write comments, period. They write oral or they write next to nothing. And I suspect part of the
Or
reason
nothing.
for that is, or nothing, right? And I suspect part of the reason for that is laziness. And I also suspect that, like me, I am much faster at typing and find it less strenuous in my hand than writing, actually. And if I had the option to type things up, I'd be happy to do that. Plus, at very high level terms, I mean, this happens sometimes in policy. There are a couple of judges who write out comments and email it to the coaches, which is actually kind of neat. I mean, I don't expect that every judge would do such a thing, but I know that I appreciate getting those comments, and I know that those comments are more extensive than the comments I would get on a written ballot.
Yeah, but just for the speed of the tournament, you could use the same
Yeah.
spreadsheet that a judge used to check in for them to also enter the points of each debater and the decision, right on that same spreadsheet. Just
I just find it hard to believe that I can do all this in a Google Doc and have
you
multiple
can.
people doing
Google
it at the
Docs
same
are
time.
incredible. Yeah,
Like I
it's
said, I know we had about 100 kids log in at once, and it did not overload the Google Doc.
And you can set this up so that it has everybody in the universe has access.
Yeah, that's what we did. That's what I did with the food one because it didn't make sense for me to just add 200 kids. I said, I mean, I didn't think Sophie Ruff was going to break in to disrupt our food Google Doc, right? So it
Well, of
didn't
all
matter
the
that.
people that aren't going to disrupt your food
That's right.
Google
Okay,
Doc,
that's a good point. Fine, Zach Struver, but I didn't. It's not like that's a sensitive data or anything like that. So
Yeah, but you still don't want it to get it screwed up. I mean, you want it to be,
true,
and especially if it's, you're using it for tabbing or
but you could
something.
do it like a form. Like you could do it like a form thing where they don't see where the data is inputted. They just have a page that they type in the information to, so they
The
can't.
more unique, the more unlike everything else your system gets, the harder it is for people to learn it. So there
No, I
is
don't
some
disagree.
benefit to having a Google thing. On the other hand, that's like so vanilla in its way that you have to work it up to death anyhow before people can
But
actually
you could
use it
just make
correctly.
a thing where they don't see where all the data is inputted to. They just have a thing that says win, lost. I mean, we do something like this in our camp practice rounds, and it works perfectly, actually. And then
Yeah,
for
you
the
can
few
just use
judges who
it.
don't do it, you just follow up with them. I mean, one thing I like is tournament. Joy of Tournaments actually, I don't think, does this, but Tab Room does this, where it asks you to input the cell phone number of your judges. Now, not
Correct.
everybody does that, but I think that's very neat that that data exists somewhere in the computer. So, like, if you really had to track somebody down, you had their phone immediately, and you didn't have to, send the runner or go through the judge, the coach of this.
Again, once it's captured in Tab Room, Chris could conceivably pull it out any which way he wanted to and give you a list of these things or
Yeah, I mean,
integrate it
any.
into something else. The trouble with any of this is finding a good place to break it in, because we're talking about a fairly big thing to break in as compared to a little bit here and a little bit there. Like, okay, I'm talking about texting here and this, blah, blah, blah. And this is asking people to do a lot. And you need the right venue
I
to
actually
do this sort
have,
of thing.
I mean, I've told you before, I've kicked around the idea of doing electronic ballots at Brock Science. I mean, I have very definite ideas of how it could be done. And I think it's way more doable than we're saying it is. On the other hand, I mean,
Well,
I
the thing
do
about
like that
Bronx
it comes.
science, you have a fairly good, a smart control group, shall we say. I mean,
Right, yeah,
almost
I agree.
smarter than a lot of others. But at least, if they can't figure it out, then nobody can figure it out, kind of thing.
Well, I
But
don't
you're
disagree with that at all. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
that's the.
So you're getting people who, ought to be, this is as good as it's going to get. And you have, really smart, sharp judge pool, and they're not roaming around too much. But I mean, I don't care. Even, every tournament I go to, the most organized tournament in the world, picking up ballots is always crazy because there's just not a, you got to get 30, 50, 80 people through in a couple of minutes. It's just, it's just not so, it's just not easy. So anything that we can do to speed that up is going to, it's going to be nicer for the people who are judging. They're going to be happier not to stand on that line for 10 minutes. Everybody crushing everybody else, and half the people standing in the front are the kids who should be looking at a schematic, but they're sitting there. Are you a judge? No. Please move away from the table. This kind of stuff. That would be. Yeah, if you're willing to give it a go, I mean, you would be the kind of place that I would rec I think, would be a really good
I'd be
test.
happy to give
And the
it.
worst case scenario is not working, stop. Okay.
Plus, I mean, the reason why it would make sense at Bronx too is because we're all in one building.
Right,
So
exactly.
even if something were to go completely wrong, you could everyone is pretty captive. And I mean, no
Right,
one's walking
exactly.
And
outside. You could
you could change the system. Okay, it didn't work, everybody. Okay, fine. And you could get that out to people, as compared to, well, they're five buildings away, they don't know what to do, then they're all, and plus you have runners, they could help people, so forth and so on.
I mean, I basically have enough runners to have a runner on every round, or at least like one per two rounds. I've realized this after a while. I mean, I don't do it that way because they'd be working around the clock, but like, it's something I'd be interested in implementing, just because I feel like with electronic ballots, it's just so obvious that that's what we should be doing, right? It seems
I'm
it
willing
just
to
seems so
work with you
evident
on
to me
this.
that
I
that is
like the
what should
idea.
be.
I like the idea, and especially if it's just a Google Doc thing, because that means it's basically an Excel thing, and that's fine. So.
As an aside, the last couple weekends, with the tournaments all being in high schools as opposed to college campuses, it is so much more pleasant to be all in one building and to have everyone all in one place with a cafeteria to sit at. And it's just way more pleasant, and it seems like things run so much more quickly in a high school.
Yeah, the turnaround is fast. I mean, we were in Ridge High School in Jersey, and this last weekend, very, very big school, laid out flat, pretty flat, so it's, just sort of move and you get to wherever you have to go. And every time you look around, the runner was standing there with a whole new bunch of ballots, so they had a lot of runners. And straightforward as compared to Princeton the week before that, which went fine, it went great, but it's just not as easy. And you people are and roaming around, and you're roaming around for that
I think the
matter.
other thing with high school tournaments, I've always believed this versus college tournaments, is that the LD community respects the high school environment more than a college environment. I actually mean that really seriously, because the high school environment is the host are people that we compete against. They're people who we know, part of our community. Whereas college tournaments, even when they're made of former LDers, you don't feel the same kind of connection, I guess. And I think that there's that issue. And then of course there's just the physical plant issue. Like colleges are really spread out. Even at even when I hosted a full on tournament at VASS or something that I plan to bring back, even there where it's a fairly small campus, it's still spread out. It's just necessarily spread out because no building is going to have the number of rooms that a high school does.
Yeah, I always feel like at a either when I'm working in the tab room at a college tournament or just as an outside observer, that when the ballots are released or when the schedules are released, you're taking a huge leap of faith that everyone's going to be there, because everything things can be so spread out. You can't send a runner to every room to sort of make sure that things have started on time, and you're just praying and crossing your fingers.
I always make jokes with my own debaters that I refer to certain kinds of tournaments that are stressful experiences, like the high school tournaments, cold sweat tournaments, also known as nostrum tournaments, where it just feels like it's something out of the nostrum. But college tournaments are a different kind of nervousness. I think that you're totally right about that. And Princeton was really the, I've run a lot of tournaments, but Princeton was really the first big college tournament that I was directly involved with beyond, besides like pre-tournament setup. And Jim, I gotta give Jim credit because he was pretty calm the whole time, but I kept thinking like, how do we know any of these rounds have started? Like, we have no clue if this tournament is actually happening right now. And then I would get this occasional text message from one of my kids, like 25 minutes after, saying, like, what room am I in again? I'm thinking, oh my God, like, what is going on with this? But then I realized that, like, wait, none of the rounds have started because it takes 25 minutes to get to
Yeah,
these
part
rooms.
of it is just understanding that the time factor is different. Your
Right.
wait, you're using up all your time at the, waiting for people to get there. And after you've done it, you realize there's nothing you can do about that. It takes to, people have to walk, they have to get lost, and they're going to get lost for the whole tournament. We had people still getting lost on Sunday when we started on Friday.
And
Now,
we were in one
granted,
building. No, I'm just kidding.
yeah, we were in one
Actually, we
building,
were in one
and people
building.
would like leave the building and go
Yes, we had
somewhere
a
else.
forfeit because of that.
So, yes,
Yeah,
I mean,
it's.
there's bizarre things that will happen, and they will happen. But you do the, we talk about the time, a tournament time, MHL time, MENAC time, whatever. College tournaments run on college tournament time, and that's why we build a schedule that allows that. You just they're not crushing schedules.
It's 3 hours for a powered round at a college tournament.
There's no way around that. You just deal with it, and if you're lucky, you'll beat it a little bit. But don't count on it. Don't count on it at all. But talking about that, there's a segue here to talk about judges and some of the stuff I don't want to talk about, which I've been talking about on my blog, because we've talked about it here in the past about people who don't bring judges to a tournament or something like that, and what you can do about it. But there is one thing that has come up, and that we haven't talked about, and this is driving me a little nuts, which is, we do have this thing where every tournament has what we, an obligation to judge a round past your participation. And, of course, we do this because we can't run the tournament otherwise. Very few tournaments have enough extra judges to be able to run double octos and octos without, really taking advantage of all the judges in the pool or most of the judges. And lately, it seems more than ever, but it's always been a problem. People just don't honor the obligation for whatever reason, and don't even give a damn. I mean, they just say, "No, I'm leaving. I got other things to do tonight." It's, I, you know, there's, you know, you can't f attack, you can't tackle them and make them go judge the rounds, but they are hurting a tournament. As a general rule, they tend not to be the judges who are my A judges or something like that. But yeah,
So the
sometimes
people,
they are. Sometimes they
actually, some of
are.
these judges are also the same judges who complain that that they're being underused and whatnot, and then decide to vanish.
But
And
there's two different things. There's parent judges who have this thing, but there's a lot of them will say, "Well, my favorite ones, I have theater tickets tonight. Why do you have theater tickets tonight? You're at a debate tournament."
yes.
And it's like, get over this. I mean, you know better than this. It's not the first tournament you've been to, and the coaches aren't taking any responsibility for this. I mean, they sign up for a tournament. Well, I won't be there for the first two rounds, and I can't be there for this round. And no, I mean, it's like, how are we supposed to run the damn thing? And it's not a question of even paying money, because if I'm sitting there and, when the round goes out now, and we put out all the ballots, I always go out with the computer because I want to, if I have to push any ballots, I want to be this, because there's strikes. Otherwise, you're breathing, take this ballot. But that's the old days. Now, well, I can't give it to you because you might have gotten struck, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, standing there with the thing, and they're giving you all these excuses. Oh, no, I got to go. I got to go. And I had it like, okay, I had a parent do this, but I also had two of our A judges do this, one of whom was hired and one of whom was with the school. And I'm like, oh. Yeah, well now, well no, you can't go. And they said, "Well, yes, I can." And they win that argument. I can't really. I mean, I have some. And John, remind me. I want to talk to you about somebody when this is over, who I'll never hire again as a tournament hire. But that's the only control
That's
I
in
have
the
is never using
uncensored
them
version of
again.
the view from tap.
Yes, that'll be come back. Those of you who listened at the very end, where we have all the stuff we cut out. Anyhow, so I mean. Is there anything? I mean, are we just? I mean, some people had responded on my blog with some ideas, which I thought were just too complicated to put into effect. But This is, I mean, I think it's something, the only thing I can say to handle this is we need to have more judge meetings at the very beginning of tournaments. I don't think we do this all that much. And some, I mean, very, very seldom. I do it at colleges just because I know that there's a lot of novice judges or something. But I think we need to have a judge meeting and to tell people that, you know, some of these things that are just, you know, we so take for granted, but they're not taking it for granted. And they're the ones
I mean,
who
I think it depends on the tournament, but I do agree with you that a lot of tournaments are sorely needing such a thing. I mean, another thing that I've actually thought about with those kinds of tournaments where that happens is to give a sheet at the beginning of the tournament that outlines the expectations for a judge and make each judge sign it. I mean, because I don't know, you know.
But what's the recourse? That's the.
Well, that's
the,
yeah, that
but
recourse.
That, but
is
I don't
an
disagree
issue.
With you, but the recourse is this: the, there's still no recourse at the judge's meeting, and a judge's meeting takes forever.
Yeah.
Whereas a sheet of paper is the same information, not taking forever. I agree there's no recourse unless you say, well, then your kids are thrown out of the tournament, which no one wants to do because...
Yeah, I don't want to punish the kids, but, you know, and especially these are usually in break rounds. The kids are already out of the tournament. That's why they're leaving.
Right.
You know, so it's like, well, no, you have an obligation to the tournament. They say, well, screw that, you know, so...
Well, it's a big deal, though. I mean, I mean, judges are like the commons. I mean, they your obligations. You. Mm-hmm. One thing I saw Tara Tate do at the Glen Brooks, and this was with her debaters. A kid asked when they could leave, and she very calmly said, "You know, you're not allowed to ask that. I told you what time you're allowed to leave." And the kid, you know, sort of got in trouble just for asking what time they could leave.
Yeah, right.
You know, there could be I mean, the tough thing is that the judge puts you in a really crappy position when they're like, "Can I leave?" or "When can I leave?" That you shouldn't, because they're basically, I mean, they're to some degree playing on your emotions by being there and saying, you know, "I really have this thing I have to do. Could I just go?" And any nice person is going to say, "Yes, of course you can go," or whatever, you know. But they're
I tell them they can't go. I'm not a nice person. I'm not here to be a nice person. I'm here to run the damn tournament.
But at the end of the day, they get to go.
And they get to go. There's no question. Yeah.
I don't know if you can do an automatic fine for asking.
Jim would definitely do that.
I wish.
And but you publicize it.
How do you collect these fines after the fact? I mean, the tournament's over.
You
know?
So you can't come back next year unless you pay.
I mean, nobody's going to remember.
Maybe the debate community needs a community auditor, and you send a list to community auditor at the end of your tournament of people that didn't pay all their fees.
I don't disagree with this at all.
And then you just get a letter sent to the school saying, "This is what happened at the tournament. Either we need." You know, that basically says either pay or we're not going to let your kids come back.
I have proposed doing this, Jim, in the Northeast. I've said that before, that we should have a collective. I mean,
we've informally
done collective,
this.
Yeah, I know, but I've said like a collective blacklist for schools that don't pay, don't do this, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I don't know if it – I mean, it would just be someone that would just be in charge of sending out the nasty gram to the school administration. And it could be very –
well, I wouldn't want to start with the administration. I think I sort of like this idea, but there is some issues with, you know, you can only do so much. But if we just make it public that we know who all the local tournaments are, we know who all the local players are. So from now on, and since I'm in the damn tab room, I'll do it. Okay, I'm in the tab room, and if there is an issue, I'm going to send you a message afterwards, and then you're going to have to respond. Correct.
Yeah, but let's just be honest. We know that there are some people who have these issues that week after week after week.
But
we
no, the thing is, I don't do that. But if I did do this, I say, okay, here's the thing, and please, you know, pay up. You owe this money, or whatever the case may be. If you don't do it, I will take you out of the next tournament. And then I do take them out of the next tournament because I can do that. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I mean, it's always the coaches are ultimately responsible. The coaches are nowhere around. I mean, there are schools that come, their coach isn't there. Okay? There's a bunch of parents that
That's
are there.
True.
And I honor these parents.
I might add,
giving
I'm gonna,
time.
Maybe this is starting to get a little scandalous and close to naming names. But I'm just going to say that I'd find a great irony that some of these coaches who seem to never show up to tournaments are the same people who decry the lack of adult involvement in judging. I find that very ironic.
Yeah.
And I want to note that because, you know, I have been making a concerted effort to at least volunteer rounds of tournaments when I've covered my judging obligation. When I like for the sake of full disclosure, Blake, I have some. I'm taking these evening graduate classes. I know I'm going to need some time to finish up some work. I do want to observe some of my younger kids, but I still told Shane, put me in for a round or two if you need to, right? And I feel that that coaches who refuse to be involved either with running the tournament, like helping out running tournaments or judging at tournaments, lose, in my opinion, a lot of stance of criticizing the tournaments then about choices with strikes and mutual preferences, et cetera.
I'm not even worried about that. I mean, I'm more worried about the fact that they're just not the job of the coach. I mean, there's a number of jobs.
No, but that's
the coach.
The point.
I mean, one of the jobs is running the team. They're not running the team.
But that's the whole point. It's like these people who are very critical about tournament practice seem to me frequently to also not actually be running their own team or helping run a tournament or doing anything like that. I find that very unusual.
See, I'm thinking of people who aren't particularly complaining about stuff, and they still, you know, they don't come, and they still have hands off, and they don't talk to their, you know, I think that bad coaching has a broad spectrum.
Yes.
You know, and I mean bad coaching here in terms of not, you know, telling their kids what to run and it's the wrong stuff, as compared to like just not organizing the people that you're sending representing your school. You're sending them to another school. This is a team. You know, if the football team, you know, behaved this way, you know, if your, you know, football coach decided not to show up for a game, there might be a problem. If the quarterback decided to go home after the third quarter, there might be a problem. You know, so there are some things that, you know, but here we're relying on.
And even
on some,
I can get that, you know, sports analogy, by the way.
finally, a sports analogy that you understand that. Finally, a sports announcer, that's a pretty big deal. I don't know what to say. I mean, part of it, too, I also blame the kids in these situations as well, because it's the kids, it's their parents, and the kids know better. And the kids are, like, I don't know, for whatever reason, not telling their parents what to do either. Yeah, so the stuff is sort of like it's cancerous. It grows through the whole team. I mean, they're just sort of, you know, using the you know, they're like parasites on the parents, and the poor parents probably don't even know what they're doing half the time.
Right.
And so they're doing this stuff inadvertently. They're not trying to be evil. They don't even know. But, you know, the tournament is being hurt by this. You know, a lot of times, I mean, I sort of like being able to take parents, put them into PF, take parents, put them into novice or something like that, and then rounds they can judge where they're going to be, you know, very helpful and very happy to be judging those rounds and stuff like that. I can't do it if they're not there. You know, I can't do it if they're totally untrained. You know, they come to tournament totally untrained. No coach has ever touched them. No coach has ever talked to them. No coach has sent them, a essay on how to judge, which we have a million of. I've written a million of them myself. They're available on the internet. Nobody sends any of this stuff to people. And, yeah, and it drives me nuts. And it seems to be getting worse. Either I'm not getting older. So it must be getting worse. It is. And every tournament is just, you know, more aggravating to deal with these issues week after week. I don't know what the solutions are. Really. And I don't know if you can really become a policeman. Because I
don't want to be that person either. On the other hand, if there's going to be any change, at some point you have to say you're not welcome back to the tournament unless you... I've done that with one or two schools at my own tournament now. These were really serious offenders and generally involved lying. Because lying to me is the worst of a tournament. At that point, you've lost all credibility if you're lying about things at tournaments. But it's tough, especially when the worst offenders sometimes have big teams, and the reality is you need your term to be populated, and you want those people, and you don't want to take it out on the kids. But you got to make a decision about how much it's impacting everyone else.
The tournaments that need to, you know, sort of do it. And I know that, like, for example, the Glenbrooks, I mean, Tara will just say, okay, when they say, well, we're not going to come back, Tara says, okay, there's 200 people behind you that will happily take your spots. The tournaments that fill fast are the ones that probably should, I mean, you don't want to make this the tournaments that truly rely on every single person and, you know, are begging for people to come to their tournament to have to be the ones to enforce this. But the tournaments that are turning people away can be the sticklers. I mean, you know, there are some tournaments, and I I'm starting to think about doing this, where they'll say, who are you going to bring to judge before I let you, you know, enter the tournament? If it's someone that is always just bringing, you know, a parent to judge at a TOC bid tournament, you know, I sort of want to know, are you going to be contributing, or are you going to, or at least are you going to hire a judge, so that, you know, you're paying for me to bring someone in expert, because your parent's just going to sit here until round four, when I can put them in an 0-3 round.
At my own tournament, I have negotiated with people on this point. And I haven't done it as a formal thing, but if I see a judge that is not appropriate for the caliber of tournament that I run, I have politely asked, would this person be willing, can this person judge another event? Blah, blah, blah.
I've
or
done
can
that
we talk
too.
About, you know, can we talk about what we're going to do about this judge? And
I mean,
I've never done it in a mean way. I've always done it in a very polite way because, you know, a lot of people know what the deal is.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this. I mean, PJ and I have talked about this a lot, the PJ factor, where you know, they get the people, and he will train them. It doesn't matter. I mean, they're going to be lowly ranked, and so they're not going to get rounds, and I'd much rather put them into PF or into novice where they will do this stuff. But I have had judges who resent the thought, you know. But, I mean, they're sort of, you know, we'll deal with it because we have to – either they're going to sit there and do nothing – and they're just they don't like that either. And they're frankly, I think any parent who is not experienced is going to be much happier judging novice
Definitely.
Than judging varsity, because they feel capable of doing that. They don't want to feel like an idiot. They want to feel like like they're using their brain in the right way. And,
yeah, but then you need to replace that judge somewhere.
That's true.
But at least if I know in advance, I can make those. I can do certain things, and I can make certain arrangements because I know what I'm doing and I know what my limitations are, and I'll do that. And I've done that a couple of times. But I think we have to all be sort of a little more vigilant about this. But obviously, I'm one of the ones who have to be the most vigilant because I tend to have the most knowledge. The other thing is sometimes I get it wrong, and I don't like to take action because I misunderstood something. You know, so. You know, and then they don't. Oh, no, I really meant this. Blah blah blah. And I'm a sucker for their excuses, but you know, you have to be careful of being too much of a bastard. I'm, you know.
Yeah, but to me, bringing someone who is truly not qualified to be judging at the caliber tournament, or if someone can honestly ask themselves, would they be happy with this judge in the back of the room, and they answer no, is. The all you know, maybe not the equivalent, but almost the equivalent to someone leaving early, or not showing or showing up without a judge.
No, I don't disagree. I mean, I totally when I'm looking. Okay, so in tabroom.com, you have this option saying like, what is the judge's ranking? Like your own ranking of your judge. And when I look at these people who are like not qualified to judge this event. And I think, then why the hell did you put this person in this event? What are you doing?
But the thing is, one of the things
tournaments and say, I don't know how to read a. I mean, people who don't know how to read the pairings.
Chris has had a thing that he said, Chris Palmer had a thing where he said he could put it into Tab Room, where you would ask for what tournaments has this judge judged at before. So at least you would have people aren't, you know, people will sort of like slide somebody in, but they're not necessarily inclined to actively lie. So they would sort of leave that blank, and you could look and say, well, you left this blank. Why is this blank? And what am I supposed to do with this person? Yeah, so it forces their hand a little bit as compared to, oh, they just put down a bunch of names and nobody really cares, and then they send them there and that's the end of it. You know, so it would force that, because, I mean, we do have one tournament where we do have to have, our CFL qualifier, they have to have judged three times. And so that we do have to know this. So having this information is actually there.
As long as that information is saved and you don't have to retype it every single time, which I find that's true. It's like the most tedious part of you know, applying to compete at Emory is the filling out the application. It's like, wow, I wish this information were just saved somewhere so I don't have to do that every time. So I guess it's not the equivalent to that.
This is why they invented your team. Have them type it in.
I guess.
Yeah.
However,
well,
it's tedious for everyone. No one should have to. Okay, anyway.
Well, if anyone has to do it, it's them.
I guess that's true.
And it's how many? It's only two of them, you know, or four of them or whatever. Yeah, you know, it's not that big a deal. John, you complain about everything.
Oh, yeah, please.
Unlike me.
Let's go to kowakian.blogspot.com to see what real complaining is.
I never complain about anything. I have a very rosy view of the world.
Nope.
On that note, we actually have come to the end of the show. And the one thing we promised ourselves, because we were going to talk about the topic, is that we didn't talk about the new topic, so we can really be proud of ourselves.
Well, this will also make for a more meaningful discussion next time, because after Blake, we'll actually have seen some arguments on the new topic. It should be interesting.
I was going over my notes from the last time. I had like 90 pages of notes, because back then I was judging very actively. I bet you there's no difference, but we'll talk about that. We will talk about that.
Well, it's interesting. We were having this discussion.
Now we're talking about it now. We can't
I just
want to
say really quickly, it's because I'm pretty sure I also debated this topic in high school, like a similarly worded topic. It's interesting to see how the slight difference in wording each time does actually make somewhat of an impact on it. Maybe. Should be interesting to see.
We'll see.
Well, there's a lot more similarity between this topic and the last one as opposed to the one previous and the one.
The one that I had.
Like debated. The 01 and the 06 or whatever.
But people are going to be experts on the criminal justice system, so they can all go and be lawyers when they or criminals when they grow up, and they'll know what to do. Okay, guys. Holidays are coming. We won't do this again until after the holidays. So have a good one.
Okay. I didn't know that. Okay. Well, happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Okay.
Bye.